This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're on location with Abdul Ali, and he has a very busy schedule, and he teaches and does so many things, but today he is ours, and we are glad. Abdul, give us an opening poem.
Oh, sure. Without office hours, always the scene begins with dark. You are always in the dark, like that time you entered your office and everyone suddenly stopped talking. You've become skilled at diffusing potentially awkward situations. So you say, "Don't worry, I just need my laptop. You can continue gossiping." To which they let out a nervous clamor. You laugh with them, maybe a bit too hard. You think to say something, but catch yourself as everything has already been said.
Abdul Ali, the honesty of that just starts my day. Thank you. Now, we talked to you yesterday, and you were at a book launch, and you're teaching, and you're writing. What's going on? What's going on in your world?
Well, you know, I'm semi-empty nester now, and I'm trying to take full advantage because, as you know, I was a single parent pretty much Kayla's entire life, and it just gobbles up all of your energy, and it's hard to be a poet, you know, and earn a living and, you know, tend to your child and cook the dinners and check the homework.
And we saw the pictures of her prom dress.
Yes, yes.
And we have watched her grow up under your beautiful umbrella.
Well, it takes a village. I'm so proud for that village and grateful.
Well, you are doing a lot, and you are teaching at Morgan State University. But right now, let's hear another poem.
Sure. So the first poem that I read is part of a series, so I'll continue. A colleague of yours mentions that many of our students of color are on scholarship. You turn in your seat wishing you could dissolve like the ice cubes in your caffeinated drink you picked up before work. Your eyes are now fixed on the colleague. You give them your undivided attention. A cloud of uneasiness fills the space between you and them while the others watch to see who will speak next. Not being rude, you transition to the convocation speech a senior who is Black gave yesterday about the founders of the school being staunch eugenicists. "What did you think about the convocation speech?" you ask. Wait for a response. Flat silence.
Your new stuff just bowls me over. How do you think you've changed since, 10 years ago, you won the New Issues Poetry Book Award for Trouble Sleeping?
Yes.
How do you think you're the same? And how do you think you've changed in 10 years?
I appreciate that question, Grace. Well, I believe I'm the same in that I'm curious about life. You know, the poet, you're always in that state of becoming. Mm. And I feel like I'm becoming more myself, more grateful, wiser, smarter. I'm able to really dive in, you know, like if we were to compare life to this great lake that we have to wade through, at the beginning, you're afraid to the water to get too high, but I'm more fearless. And so water is up to my eyeballs.
Oh,
I'm still waiting.
I love that answer. Says it all. You haven't drowned yet, have you?
I haven't drowned yet. And I learned to swim too.
That is a great answer. Well, you are also called a culture worker. And
yes,
that says a lot. It's about activism, using literature to make changes in the world. But right now, I'm in love with your new work. Read us two together.
Oh, thank you. So this is another part of the same series, Without Office Hours, about my work as an academic. 3. On the day of your interview, a full itinerary is prepared. Jokingly, you wonder if you should have requested potty breaks. Never has your day been this structured. About 6 or 7 hours of back-to-back meetings. During lunch, you meet the only Black faculty member in the English department who is leaving. You don't think anything of it except that the coincidence is more than ironic. You try to make small talk. You want to gauge if there is any coded language from the sister that says, get out. Do not succumb to this sunken place. Instead, you get an unexpected quiz during lunch from the Black faculty member. How will you, as a Black man, teach these privileged kids how to read Black literature as universal? Before I can respond, she cuts me off. They will laugh at the dialect. They will laugh at you. They will ask you to read in dialect. They will make you their... Yeah.
And another.
You're having a check-in with one of your writing mentors, who is white. They've been awfully generous over the years. You get to talking about translation, how you'd like to try it someday. You comment on the relatively low visibility of African poets in the United States, with a few exceptions. You mention that one day you would like to take up this work. Their response, maybe a real African should translate an African poet. Your mind swirls around the word real and African. You time travel for what feels like hours to your childhood. You see that moving white van, the bald-headed young men who are white shouting, go back to Africa, nigger. Mm. There goes that word again, African made real.
Abdul Ali, I get so many vibrations in your work. It is so powerful. And I was going to ask you about the influences, the antecedents, both alive and dead, that are in your lineage. I get Terrence Hayes.
Really?
I get Robert Hayden.
Oh, I love
it. I get so many people. What do you attribute your DNA to in poetry?
Wow, that is a great question. You know, our friend Dolores Kendrick, I am forever in her debt.
I miss her so much.
I miss her so much, but she was an educator, a longtime educator, and she entered a lot of spaces with her head up high. And I feel like I apprenticed myself to her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yes.
You enter spaces with your head held high.
Yes.
I get that in your poetry. I do.
Oh,
and you think that you learned something just from watching her life?
Well, reading her work, you know, and her strong sense of individualism, not trying to fit into any fading schools or verse cultures or the cool clubs, you know, and maybe in some way she suffered for it. But I hope that I can do my work as a culture worker to recognize. And as you said, when we remember these wonderful human beings, we keep them alive and we keep them on the syllabus and we keep them in our collective memory. And that's hopefully one of the things that I want to do with my work, with my life work.
She's here. I feel her. I feel Dolores here with her high heels.
Yes.
Yeah. But if I feel that the kindness that you emanate is given to your students, that's what I want for education.
Oh, yes.
And you're in the graduate program?
I teach in the graduate program, and they trust me with the undergrads too, so I must be doing something right.
So you're trustworthy.
I hope
but
so.
How many are in, is it an MFA program?
No, it's a PhD program.
This is big.
Yeah.
This is big. And what do you think you teach? Besides the canon?
Well, I hope that I teach my students how to have a respect for the craft and One of my students the other day said that our ancestors were writing for future audiences. And I would also, you know, and I it struck me because I thought, gosh, what optimism, you know, they must have had to risk limb and life to learn how to read and write and to publish against all these odds so that we can see that humanity and pass it on and pass it on and pass it on. Yeah.
Well, your first four poems, which are so riveting, are making a thumbprint in eternity, because you're making your little indentation about what it was like to be Abdul Ali in academia and what is really, and here you look like the professor on the outside and on the inside, so much richness going on. So I find, of course, I think poetry can save the world, but yes. I do think that carrying on and carrying on is all we can do. So Abdul Ali has been published in many literary magazines. As I said, in 2014, a New Issues Poetry Book Prize was given to Trouble Sleeping. And he teaches in the graduate English department at Morgan State University. But more than that, he's a consultant to arts organizations and other artists. In other words, he passes on what he knows to enrich everyone around him. And now we would like a poem in a different mode, because I want to get in your head. I don't know if it's going to be scary or not, but I would like everyone to know how you do it. So I would like you to take a poem of yours and read it and then untangle it, say where you were when you thought of it or how it came to you, how you entered it, what you had to overcome, how you made the poem. And I think that will be fun.
Okay, sure. So I'm going to read a poem that I wrote called Metaphor. Okay. I like to think of my body as a house, cellular walls covered in red, the eyeball, a window into another dimension. I was born into a body not of my choosing, always too something, too pale, too fragile, a poor constitution. There are cracks in this house's foundation. Weeds and wildflowers seep into the basement. During rain season, the basement floods. The water climbs the stairs. One day, I fear the water will reach the attic where I'll be, holding my breath, preparing.
Hit me.
Yeah, so, you know, part of getting older is realizing that the body is fragile, you know, and I have had my, I have sleep apnea. And I mean, there's so many things that just started coming up after age 28, you know, and, you know, I'm so grateful that nothing has been too big to knock me down on my butt. But, you know, it really, this poem, I really wanted to show that, you know, whether you have a brick house or whatever kind of house, you know, it requires maintenance, you know, it's imperfect, it's vulnerable. And so I hope that I was, you know, kind of communicating that in this poem. Yeah.
And the title sets it up quite well, I think.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, because it's an extended metaphor, which is really hard to keep clicking, you know, to keep the energy up, but you do that. Mm-hmm. And so you think, that's very strange. My poetry group, I just gave them an assignment last week to write a poem about their bodies. And now I'm going to bring this one to our next meeting and blow them away.
Oh, please invite me to your group.
Abdul Ali, come to Annapolis. We have food.
Oh, lovely.
We have cake.
Oh, and goodness.
More Abdul Ali is in your future. And here it is. Your future's now with another poem.
Oh, great. Okay. Pastoral. You could get lost in a spell walking past all of these trees, dogwood, honey locust, magnolia. Each scene is a glimpse of a bygone era preserved, the big house, all white, columned, stately. Its resemblance to a plantation, striking, arresting even. The kitchen staff are out front pushing a wheeled cart of lemonade and sugar cookies in the shape of daisies. I catch sight of their starched white uniforms, their wave almost robotic, the skyline a luminous stitching of cotton. It's hard to imagine all of this working here. Its founding only decades after emancipation. I walk through the front door, laughing privately at the irony of this black male with letters entering the front of the house without carrying a jug of lemonade.
That feels so Terrence Hayes to me.
Oh,
yeah. It's
compliment.
Powerful and subtle, metaphoric and personal. Yeah. Do you like his work?
I do. And I like him as a human being, too. And all of the recovery work that he's doing around Wanda Coleman, which I think is the job of the poet to not just write great poems, but culture work. And that's exactly what I'm about.
Say more about what culture work is.
Well, I think for me, culture work is the recognition that we are all here together. You know, we are all living in one imperfect house and we have different abilities. Some may be handy with the hammer and could fix a roof. Some may be handy in the kitchen and can fry some chicken, but we have to do what we must to live together or we'll perish together.
Oh, well said, well said. So when you have these students and it's the first day and a new group comes in, what might be the size of a group of a graduate class? Five?
Well, last semester it was five. And this semester I have 11.
And what is the first thing you say to them?
Well,
besides your name, how do you enter that blank space?
Well, the thing is, I don't think it's a blank space. I think it's a rich space. Each of my students are a living text, you know, and I want them to be seen. I want them to feel comfortable. I want them to know that this is fertile soil and they can plant themselves and they are going to be watered and nurtured.
Do you say that?
Well, I hope I show that. I don't say that, but I show that.
And what do you think is the argument that is being taught in poetry? What are we doing? There's always an argument at the same. In others, there are always converging points of view about everything. What do you think there are? What's the conflict in poetry? What are the convergences?
Well, that's a really big question.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. That's why I asked you.
Ooh, that may make two of us. But I will say this. I'm very excited with these citizen poets who are doing documentary poetics, and they are showing us that whether we recognize it or not, we are all witnesses to something. And it is our imperative to not look away, to not look away.
Mm.
And if we can heed that imperative, I think that we could be about the work of building a stronger house for humanity.
Your first four poems, which were a sequence, are about that. I mean, you could have said anything, but you didn't look away from the essential experience, which had to be difficult in a way to write, because it is, the truth is a wound, isn't it? And I really value those four poems as well as your others. They seem to be a departure in your writing to me, in form.
Yes, I am experimenting with the prose form, and it takes a certain kind of faith that I am going to still pay attention to how I break the line. I'm still paying attention to the music of the line. I'm still paying attention to image. It's still a poem, but I am sort of relying on instinct to kind of direct the flow of the traffic of what's going on in the poem, which is different by than saying I'm going to write a 10-line poem with 10 syllables or something like that.
Oh, so that's the secret to the prose poem.
Well, I don't know if that's the secret.
Everyone's asking, you know, what is a prose poem? Well, I think Valerie may have written the first one. And so I say, well, it's margin to margin, for one thing. And secondly, we do have lyricism in the line so that it's not really prose, is it? Mm-hmm. We do have, it's the way that words are put one next to another. But yours look awfully pretty on the page, too.
Oh, thank you. But I do care about prosody. You know, like there's an organic poem in our natural speech, you know?
Oh, yeah. 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 And so if you can get your graduate students to find their voices, their breath, their natural cadence, that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Will they get a PhD in poetry?
Well, many of them are doing creative dissertations, and some of them are doing more critical studies, and some of them are hybrid. So, you know, it's a exciting place at Morgan State University where students, they get to see themselves as creative writer scholars. You know, they don't have to choose one. They can embrace both.
That's very unusual. When you say a hybrid, that you could have critical theory as well as poetry in one paper, in one dissertation?
Exactly.
Love it.
Yeah.
We will have a final poem from Abdul Ali.
So I'm going to read this poem called Pastoral Outro, which I wrote on the last day of my final year at the Cave Canem Poetry Retreat. Pastoral Outro. I'm with my spirit family, the Black poets, gathered for a photograph during a retreat. Behind us are treetops populating the Allegheny Mountains, a phalanx of broccoli crowns. There are foxes chasing each other on a pristine lawn, a gazebo where Lucille Clifton posed for her iconic photo, staring at the sky as if God owed her money, or an answer, or both. Soft footsteps of a doe crushing leaves nearby. I feel a poke and laugh nervously. Say Wakanda, the photographer intones. Voices of the undead whisper. A fruit fly lands in my eye. I ask for a retake. The ancestors move through the trees. Baraka startles me. Sit up straight, Negro. Monica Hand carries a Bluetooth speaker where Nina Simone sings Wild as the Wind. In a cameo, Toni Morrison, white-haired, glides across the lawn, feet never touching the ground, leans into my ear. Did you free yourself? I say, what? She smiles. Did you free somebody? That is your only job, before vanishing.
You know what?
What?
I am hungry. I want another final poem.
Another final?
Sorry. I've never done this before, but I want another final poem.
Okay. So I'm really excited about pastorals, so I'll read another pastoral. All is noise. The nonstop honking of fire trucks, bulldozing through traffic, angry birds outside my window at 5 a.m., neighbors who take my parking space daily. The daily calendar keeps flipping forward. This is my self-talk. Breathe in, breathe out. Things have come to this. I want to see a full orange moon close, finger its craters, see blue grass, feed, milk, and sing to the goats, go hiking in my backyard, a forest, host naming ceremonies for new births, grow wheat and brew my own beer, learn to play guitar and write lyrics, paint in long strokes and bold swaths of color. To hell with checking email. Let all this landscape distract me from loneliness. Oh, muse and nature's songs, make me over a born-again African. Grow my own vegetables, build a fire, dance with friends with painted faces. I want to hear God. I want to know companionship like the earth knows silkworms. This is all I want. Something different, wild, under moonlight.
The voice of Abdul Ali, and it is the poet and the poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the library for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, Rivada Foundation, Anne Arundel Council for the Arts, the Women in the Song Room, Natalie Canavore, Sandy Jackson Cohen, Mike Turbins, our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.